Hello and welcome to Pond Jumpers, the international podcast for open source developers. This is episode 4, interview with Clojure guru Stuart Halloway, recorded October 18th, 2009. Okay, hello, I'm Greg Turnquist from Harris Corporation.
Cool, I'm Russ Miles, here from Open Credo in the UK.
Hey, I'd like to welcome everyone to this Clojure edition of Pond Jumpers, where we're honored to have Stuart Halloway here to talk to us a little bit about the Lisp side of things, and also to more specifically his book he recently produced, Programming Clojure.
Hi, Greg, Russ. How are you?
Very good. Very nice to meet you at last. This has been, I would say, the marathon of Pond Jumpers interview sessions, getting this one set up. For those that aren't friends of ours, you won't have realized that this has probably taken a combined effort of about, a month and a half to get us all sitting at the same computers at the same times.
So, yes, we had the three of us at several points, but now we're all together finally.
I think I should put my head up and say it's probably my fault most of those times. I have a young daughter whose time scales are different from the rest of the planet. But she's getting there. Anyway. Okay, so let's kick things off. How much regular Java coding are you doing these days, Stuart? I mean, we all know you for Clojure and the book, but how much regular Java are you writing? I spoke recently to Jeff Brown, who's one of the guys behind Groovy and Grails, and he said that he was probably writing 90% Groovy these days, occasionally ducking into Java. So what's the environment like for a Clojure developer?
I think that's certainly right. I mean, first off, in my case, I really made a switch from Java to Ruby in mid-2005. And so myself and Justin Getlin, my business partner at Relevance, were doing web app development, primarily Spring and Hibernate at that time, and got on the Ruby and Rails train fairly early, and at that point started offering people Java development pricing and Rails development pricing. The result of which was we didn't do any straight-up Java projects after 2005. And that's continued. Now that we are looking at Clojure, it's more of the same. So my coding is probably 60 to 70% Clojure and 30% Ruby, and that is, you know, back and forth on unrelated projects. So in a couple of cases, we're actually using both Clojure and JRuby on the same project. There are certainly problem domains, and we may get to this later in the talk, where you would use Java straight up, but they're pretty few and far between.
Excellent, excellent. So very, very quickly, what are those sorts of domains where you might have to duck into Java? Because, I mean, it sounds really compelling that you become using Ruby, running it on the Java platform, giving it JRuby, and a combination of that with Clojure. And I really want to get into one of those sort of use cases where it's just perfect every time. So we can cover the base off, what are the real, you know, edge cases where Java has sort of had to come back into your development life recently?
Well, it actually hasn't for us. I know they are out there. We have not, I don't think I've written a line of Java for production code in 4 years. I think the places where it might come back in is if you wanted to have direct control at the JNI level to reach out to a native device, or if you were working on something that was real-time and you are doing object pooling and trying to avoid having a garbage collector pause, even of the young generation garbage collector, something like that, it's conceivable that you would find yourself dropping to assembly language, which is what I think of Java these days. And in fact, I have a project coming up over the next couple of months where we're going to be exploring that and looking at using Clojure in an environment where garbage collector pauses are intolerable. And so I'll have more to report on that in a few months. But for general application development, for business applications, for web applications, for applications that need to scale, there hasn't been any problem with Ruby, really, in the last several years for us. And Ruby's a slow language. Clojure's a fairly fast language by comparison, so we're not seeing any problems and really don't anticipate seeing problems. A lot of the stuff people argue about in terms of performance and scalability is really kind of a red herring.
Cool.
Now, I'm a Java dev by, you know, my daytime job, and I try to tinker into some of the dynamic languages also from time to time, but I'd be kind of interested to hear what your elevator pitch is for using Clojure. You know, if I was to take that to my manager.
So I don't necessarily pitch Clojure for everyone, but the interesting thing about Clojure is that there are probably five separate elevator pitches, any one of which is good enough to justify bringing it in. I came to Clojure looking for the expressiveness of Lisp. So certainly someone who has followed folks like Paul Graham and Steve Yeagy over the years talking about the importance of Lisp and the benefits of a homoiconic language and the benefits of having the entire language there all the time. I got a lot of those benefits by a lot of the benefits that Paul Graham talked about in some of his famous articles by going to Ruby from Java, but I was aware that I didn't have all of them, and I really wanted to have the full boat and know what it was like to do production work with all of those benefits, and Clojure certainly provides that. So that's you know, elevator pitch one. Hey, it's a great Lisp that runs on the JVM. For the last 20 years, smart people have been saying, you know, if we had a community, if we had an organization, if we had, you know, a group of people around a successful Lisp, that would win. And I think Clojure has that, and that's enough right there. And maybe I should stop for a moment and we can explore that a little bit. But then I think there are other advantages beyond that as well.
Very, very cool answer. So basically it sounds like it's that general purpose of language. There's plenty of good arguments for it regardless where your perspective is and where you're coming from. So one of the questions I always like to ask, because I'm a polyglot programmer, I'd love to have time to pick up some more Clojure. Well, what's the biggest beef you have for people who are coming from a pure, and I say pure in a sense, but probably an inverted comma around it, but an OO environment where they're used to Java and they're used to something perhaps mentally a little more simplistic, arguably, I guess maybe complicated, arguably, but they're used to the baggage of Java. What's the usual beef that you hear from people who are just coming to Clojure, and what's your usual answers to those things?
So I think that the superficial beef is obviously going to be Lisp syntax and having everything with the parentheses around the outside and living with that. That's fairly superficial, and people get past that fairly quickly. The more substantial beef, once you dive in and start working, is realizing how different, in fact, things are working in a language that aims to be an effective functional language, whereas Java is much more of an imperative programming language. And so programmers are not accustomed to the idea of having most of their program work by the application of pure functions and working with immutable objects. And there's an intuition, an incorrect intuition, that, hey, how am I supposed to do anything if I can't do anything, so to speak, right? If I'm going to have all these functions that never do anything, where's the there at the end of the day? And, of course, people that come from an FP background, someone who's programming in, say, Haskell, aren't going to have any problem with Clojure and are going to see the benefits of that immediately. But for someone coming from Java, it's really almost everything you've been told is wrong. And there's such a huge reset on how to think. I've actually gone to encouraging, if someone looks a little bit scared, I've been saying, well, you know what, don't do it. Go and use Ruby or Groovy and get some of the benefits. Get an expressive language, get functions and simple syntax for blocks and, you know, map and filter and those kinds of things. And make yourself more comfortable. Don't jump all the way to Clojure in one step if you're the cautious, afraid type, because you're not going to be happy because the water's deep.
All right. Okay. So I mean, that's a very important point. If the language itself is quite a big jump, or maybe the mental shift is a bit of a jump. Is there any good articles that you'd recommend people, or, you know, maybe some mental tricks, or even some programming exercises that would help get people from that, frankly, very common object-oriented Java mindset over into a more Lisp functional programming land? Because we hear about this more and more, even on the PondJumpers interviews, is that we meet loads of people that are talking functional programming, but we're meeting, and we're quite aware of this, we're meeting some of the leaders in this environment. We're not speaking to everybody in the environment, and I think there's an awful lot of people that don't yet know what the next step should be in their programming learning life. From you, what would be your, if you try and wind yourself back, wind history back a little bit, what would be your first step if you were just a Java guy for a moment? What would be your next step? What would you try and get your head around first?
I think there are two things that are worth doing. The first one, and this is one that I did, is there's a great book on Lisp, Practical Common Lisp. It's available online for free at gigamonkeys.com. And when I was learning Clojure, I went and implemented the Practical Common Lisp examples in Clojure. And the nice thing about that is it's a very readable book. It's a great intro to Lisp in general and using Lisp in kind of real-world type settings. And it's fairly gentle. And then go through that. I would actually recommend go through that and do the exercises in Lisp and go through it again and convert them to Clojure. And that will force you to engage with Clojure's functional nature, because Practical Common Lisp does not take a strong stance on a pure functional style. And so you have to make those translations. And of course, I posted all of the ones that I did online. And so that's all there. It's all, you know, open sourced, and people can go and grab that from my GitHub account, github.com/Stuart Halloway. The Practical Common Lisp examples are all up there. So if you want to have, you know, see where somebody else has gone before, you can do that, or you can just do them on your own and see how that works out. The second thing I would recommend, and everybody needs to do this, is to watch Rich Hickey's most recent video on InfoQ. This is I'm actually just looking it up right now and hoping it won't start playing in the background. I believe it's called Persistent Data Structures and Managed References, but what it basically should be called is an overwhelming manifesto for everybody should be looking at Clojure or Erlang or something as opposed to thinking in terms of mutable objects. Rich has been thinking about this stuff for a long time as the creator of the language, but his ability to communicate this to others has just gotten better and better over time, and this most recent video is compelling. I've watched it twice already and plan to watch it a few more times in the next couple of weeks, heading into doing some conference talks of my own in November.
Excellent stuff. Yeah, I think I've actually seen that series. I think they may have been recorded at QCon, actually.
That's correct. It was recorded at QCon.
Yeah, I felt very lucky to be in the audience for those ones. So, yeah, a fantastic tip. Those videos are, as you say, worth their weight in gold. And I think Rich is starting to realize how to communicate to mere mortals what these things are all about, and doing a wonderful job of it. Okay, very cool.
Now I can really connect with the what you were just talking about there. You mentioned Paul Graham, and I actually had stumbled across his articles he'd written about Lisp, and I'll definitely put that link in the show notes. And I think that led me actually – I found that Practical Common Lisp book that was online, and it was really intriguing to walk through it where – you know, hands-on, you developed a query module and then an automated testing module. And that really sparked my curiosity because, I mean, I remember studying Lisp in college, but, you know, it was kind of esoteric and I never really used it in the real world. But this idea that, you know, to me, putting it on the JVM kind of puts it in my grasp. And I can imagine other people that have an interest in that. I guess definitely your book would be one recommended reading. I didn't know if there's some other particular articles or blogs or books that you know about that you would recommend for people to go out that you know, want to get into the world of Clojure.
So certainly, thanks for referencing the book. And I have a Clojure tag on my blog, so we have a lot of stuff at the Think Relevance blog. Also, there is a Planet Clojure style aggregate of a bunch of Clojure blogs. I'll make sure we have that link for the notes. So that's a way to sample the couple of dozen different people that have been blogging extensively about Clojure. And so there is actually a pretty good amount of information out there. It's a fast-moving community. Also, both from Clojure insiders and outsiders, the community has gotten positive attention for the supportiveness of the Google group, the mailing list, and Rich's personal availability there. is kind of a standout feature for the language, that really the key people in the language community are very involved with the community, and anybody can, you know, show up on IRC or on the mailing list and have a conversation with Chowser or Rich Hickey or Steve Gilardi or Stuart Sierra or any of the various people that have been contributing both to Clojure and to Clojure Contrib and the other various open source libraries that are coming up around Clojure.
Very cool. Well, you mentioned functional programming, and obviously Lisp is a beautiful case, especially a very mature case of that functional approach to breaking up a software problem. Erlang is something that we're also hearing a lot about. We're seeing Erlang applied to a lot of event-based architectural software, which seems to be sort of growing out of this acknowledgement that applications scale better if you consider their architecture a certain way, which I think a lot of the functional folks are sitting there and probably hiding their smiles behind their hands, because this is pretty much how they've been thinking from the year dot. When you build your software, do you build what you consider to be event-based architectures using Clojure, or is this something that you haven't really? Is it something that's is it another rebranding exercise where folks are starting to realize we need a new phrase for these things? Let's use that. I mean, is it something you see of any relevance?
Wow, so much I'd like to say to that. There is need for new terminology. I think that Clojure's approach to functional programming plus concurrency is game changing, and it's not entirely covered by the words that we have right now. One important thing to emphasize is that Clojure really solves the problem of how to think about values, identity, and state in a local context. And if you believe the Clojure approach, then you basically think that the Java approach and the Ruby approach and the Python approach and the C# approach is fundamentally broken, and that 10 years from now, nobody will write code in that way, and that it will not be considered appropriate to use mutable objects for that'll certainly exist as a corner case, and there will be places where they're appropriate, but it will not be the mainstream of how people write code. Having said that, we haven't said a lot in the Clojure world yet about what happens in the distributed scenario. So people who are looking at building things with RabbitMQ, building things with Erlang, that sort of thing, Clojure doesn't have a set of well-established libraries there. However, as a functional language, it plays extremely well with those libraries. And so there is a library called Swarmiji that wraps access to RabbitMQ. There is a library that Stuart Sierra has done for doing distributed processing with Hadoop. And all of those kinds of libraries are much easier to work with from a language like Clojure, which is already kind of aligned with the spirit of those. But there has not been yet a soup to nuts, let's go and come up with something like RabbitMQ and write it in pure Clojure. And there may not be a need for that.
Okay, so I think we've covered Clojure in the significant amount that you're using the language. And you mentioned there's a few areas where Clojure may not get all the way in terms of maybe some of the JNI type stuff. And I love your phrase, the Java's the new assembly language. I think there's a lot of people I'm going to be saying that to just to see their reaction. But I think the next question is, there's always a question on tooling, right? So what you have available to you to basically help people become as productive as possible with the language. Now, some languages, you just sit there and go, do you know what? The only tooling you really need is to turn your brain on and a text editor. Other languages, you sit there and go, look, there's just so much to deal with, and refactoring is such a common thing that's going to happen here because you can't get close to it first time, so you're going to need a lot of support. The question I think, first of all, I have is, how much tooling do you think someone needs to work with Clojure? And I guess then that leads very neatly onto what is your favorite tools in your Clojure toolbox when you're doing your 60-70% production development activities.
Right. So let me say up front that I'm all in favor of good tooling. And so I'm happy to have every awesome IDE feature ever described, every awesome debugger feature ever described, every awesome profiler feature ever described. That being said, in terms of relative importance, as you have a more expressive language, you have less need for tools. That's not to mean no need for tools, but certainly less need for tools. And during my years developing primarily in Ruby, my IDE, probably doesn't even deserve to be called that, was really TextMate on the Mac. With Clojure, I've gone back to working in Emacs. And it seems that a significant fraction of the hardcore Clojure community are either in Emacs or VI. That being said, there is evolving Clojure support on Eclipse, in NetBeans, and with IntelliJ, and there are people that are very excited about that. Certainly, when I do Java, I've used IntelliJ. I like it a lot. And if I were doing a project that was a polyglot project that was both Java and Clojure, I would probably use IntelliJ just on the strength of its Java support and perhaps occasionally jump out to Emacs. That being said, there's a strong case, if you're really in this to learn and to better yourself as a developer, there's a strong case for learning Emacs, period, right? Regardless of whether you ever plan to use Clojure for that matter. I have the very good fortune that my first job in software development, which was in 1987 or 8, was writing Emacs extensions. So I've been an Emacs user for quite a long time and didn't have to climb that hill so much later in my career. And I can imagine, you know, and it's a kind of a pain in the ass too, right? I mean, Emacs is not user-friendly in all kinds of ways that we expect things to be today, but it still has powers that other tools don't. So that's the real knife-edge decision you have to make. I'm going to go, you know, you're going to go learn something as new and novel as Clojure, and then you're going to get the double whammy of having to learn Emacs, or are you going to stick somewhere closer to home? The good news is that I think you can be reasonably effective in any environment that has indentation and maybe syntax coloring. The one you have to have is indentation, and all those tools, you know, all the IDEs do that to varying degrees. But indentation is critical in any Lisp. People who are new to Lisp freak out with the parentheses, and once you are used to using a tool that does the indentation for you, you don't even see them anymore. And, you know, you have to get past that point to be comfortable. So find something whose indentation works, and you're there from a text setting perspective. From a profiling and debugging perspective, people have had good success connecting existing Java debugging and profiling tools, which is, you know, really validates the awesomeness of having all these languages run in the Java ecosystem. I would expect that to be true. I haven't tested it as much with the other hot new JVM languages. But in concept, if you are able to create class files, then existing tools that know about class files are going to be able to work with you. And so there's a lot of ability to say, I'll just go ahead and attach an existing Java debugger to a Clojure app or an existing profiler. On the flip side, it's very easy, if you have a Lisp background, to say, I'd like to open up a REPL inside Tomcat or inside Jetty and start just using a Lisp REPL to poke around in an existing Java ecosystem, which can also be very powerful.
That sounds actually like a key case. I think I'd be very interested in, because some of the work that we're doing at the moment involves typically software as services or platform as services, the cloud based stuff. And one of the challenges we have is exposing enough detail from those applications to give our users what they want. So it sounds like it would be relatively trivial to add in a REPL for basically a Clojure REPL that someone could then use to interrogate an application running in my situation, a cloud environment. We can put it on for hours discussing exactly what that is. That is that a common case you're seeing where people are thinking, okay, maybe architect everything. But would there be a good argument to say, if I just take the piece that says, okay, I can use the REPL environment and, you know, just embed that in my application, and it gives me a very nice and neat mechanism for interacting with my running application?
I think it is. Obviously, it's worth reminding people that a REPL is a open console with a general purpose language running inside your production code. So all normal caveats apply. If you're a Ruby on Rails developer, as I am, you're accustomed to going onto a production server and carefully logging in via script console and doing things when you're managing the system. It's a lot wiser, where possible, you know, to avoid that. And one of the things that, and I should mention this, one of the things that the Ruby ecosystem has done very well is the set of tools that you have around managing deployment. And so in the Ruby world, we're accustomed to using Rake. We're accustomed to using Capistrano, and more recently a tool called Chef. One of the places in our Clojure work where we have just said, you know what, we're not going to roll the dice and invent anything new, is we continue to use our Ruby ecosystem stuff to manage deployment. So all of our Clojure app deployment is done with Rake and Capistrano and Chef, and I imagine that that will stay true for a long time. One place where Clojure is not appropriate is, you know, any place where the Java ecosystem sucks. And the Java ecosystem is not good at being Windowsy or being Unixy, because Java has made a deliberate decision to be an abstraction layer that doesn't know about those things. And so languages like Ruby that go out of their way to say, oh yeah, we'll just have some API calls that'll just work on Windows or and blow up everywhere else, or just work on Unix and blow up everywhere else, is much more willing to embrace the sort of individualness of platforms. Those languages are better for doing things like deployment automation than a language like Java. And so we have stuck with Ruby as that deployment toolkit. And I'd like to throw this out there, since maybe lots of people will get a chance to hear this. I haven't seen anything that matches up to what Ruby provides, and I would love to be proven wrong about that. I would love to get the email from somebody saying, you know what, there's tons of other tools out there for deployment automation that are way better than what Ruby has, and you should take a look at them, because we would switch if there was something better. We think the Ruby stuff is great, but we're always willing to learn.
I like throwing the gauntlet down there. I want to see if we can. So let's see if we get a flood of comments coming back on the pros and cons on Ruby, because that's one area where I don't have quite as much experience on Ruby, and I like hearing other people speak up for that. You know, that encourages me to go to check things out too. Now, Stu, you did write a series of articles about something you called Java.next, and reading those, I found them enjoyable, and I was wondering if you could elaborate on that and as to what role that you think Clojure will play in the future world of the growing, you know, this growing polyglot multi-language universe that's happening.
The idea behind Java.next was to research languages on the JVM from a perspective of talking to other folks about it, but also to decide where our own company, Relevance, was going to go and what languages we were going to focus on. And I started with 7 or 8 languages, and by the time I got around to writing the articles, had narrowed it down to 4 languages, in this case Groovy, Scala, Clojure, and JRuby. We dropped off Python and JavaScript and FAN, and those are all good languages too. The reason that I narrowed from 7 down to 4 was that I got tired of writing 7 different examples to make a point, so it was surely a matter of energy and hours that it got narrowed down to 4. Also, I felt that FAN is kind of a special case language in the sense that it targets being cross-platform, so it's obvious if that's a fit for you or if you don't care about that. And Python, JavaScript, and Ruby all compete for the same ecological niche. Right? They're all aiming at the same thing. So yes, the JavaScript and Python people will be after my head, but as a Ruby guy, I picked that as representative of that niche. Groovy has a very clear niche of, you know, easiest step away from Java. It has the least upside and the easiest way to get there from existing Java development. Scala is the only prominent Java.next language that that takes the Java static typing bet and doubles down on it and says the problem is not static typing gets in your way. The problem is Java doesn't do a good job of it, and let's be a little bit more thorough about it. So if you want static typing, it's very easy to decide where to go in this polyglot world. You're going to want to be in Scala. And lots of people are having very good success with that to date. I don't despise static typing, but I haven't found it to be in the top 10 list of things that were important to me when writing software. As a result, I didn't think it was likely that I was going to invest a lot more in Scala. And in fact, that's been the case. As a result of going through that exercise at Relevance, we've chosen to focus on 2 of those languages, JRuby and Clojure, and we're happy with that. But I'm also happy that there are a lot of choices, and I don't think that our choices are right for everybody. And the more I learn, the more humility I have. There are people that write kick-ass software with all these tools. So, you know, people need to really understand what they want and pick the one that's the best fit for them.
I think that leads us very nicely onto to the subject of popularity of these languages. We are now living in a time where there are so many different programming languages that are, to use your company's term, relevant, right? This is a time where in the past we would have maybe one or two choices, and maybe even less than that if we were working in a particular environment. Have to use, if you're working in safety critical for defense software, you were on Ada. If you were working elsewhere, you were writing PHP for our web applications. There used to be clear decisions, and I think the world now is a lot blurrier and better for it. And it's great to talk to people like yourself, Stuart, who have a very strong feeling that you have great choices made for your situation, your development tasks, your company's activities, but always keeping an eye to the plethora and growing plethora of different languages that are out there. But it does leave us with maybe a rather brutal measurement of the hotness of a new language, which is just how big the community is around it. And actually, I don't think that's the best measurement. It's usually how supportive and active that community is, because it can be very big, but it can be very quiet. And also, I mean, leading on from that, how big is the community around Clojure, but then how active they are, and then how commercial is that environment, and is it becoming more commercial?
So, I think it's worthwhile to speak to all of these languages, but maybe I'll limit my remarks to Clojure, where I have more knowledge about how things are developing. First thing I'd say is that, size isn't everything. If the Java ecosystem is going to splinter and 10% of the best developers are going to go one place and 90% are going to go somewhere else, then I would bet on where the 10% go. Even if it's only 10%, if the best developers are all going somewhere, I would keep a close eye on that. I think that a lot of great developers are coming to Clojure, but I think that, great developers are going other places as well. In terms of adoption, I'm doing a series of conference talks coming up in November, and I can give you guys links for this to go with this, where I will be making a quantitative case for how things are happening in Clojure. One of the things I did in the book was actual, let's go hit the numbers. In the case of the book, I was doing things like, let's look at this particular feature of Clojure and look at how it's being used, not just, throwing out anecdotes, but let's go count. And I've done a lot more of that recently, of actual counting. Of course, I've been able to count anecdotally successful projects within Relevance. We have three Clojure commercial projects underway right now. I expect to have two more underway by mid-November. So certainly we're using it, and our customers are happy with it. That's still a small number of projects, in the overall sea of software development. The interesting anecdote I'd offer from the project so far is that we do risk assessment sessions. Obviously, we identified being on the Clojure platform as a risk on all of those projects. So far, neither we nor any of our customers would say in a retrospective that the Clojure risk has been a problem. All the projects have been bitten right by risks, but none of those bites have come from Clojure. They've come from the other usual suspects on a new project, integrating with some third-party system or incorporating some new API or something like that. So in our experience so far, we haven't been burned by risks in Clojure in that sense. I expect at some point, obviously, we will hit things. Nothing's perfect, but it's been pretty darn terrific so far in that sense.
Very cool. Very cool. So very last thing, from a commercial quality at the moment, I understand the project is open source, and there are a number of people with companies that offer consultation and obviously development, practical development, production level development work with Clojure. I'm guessing at the moment might be small enough that there's probably a small number of very great companies that are offering great support around these things. Yourself and your company will be included, but maybe we could just name check some of those other companies that are, in your experience, offering the sort of premier consultancy around the Clojure environment.
So I'm not sure what other organizations are doing outsourced development like we are. I'm sure they are there. I think what you'll see if you look through the Clojure mailing list is more along the lines of nimble startups, right, who are using Clojure rather than using Clojure to offer services to others. The most visible one so far is the recent announcement of Flightcaster, which is the site that can predict airline flight delays before the airline knows about them. And the travel industry is all agog about the possibilities about how you make money on this. But just to focus on the technology side, they used Ruby and Rails for the front end and Clojure and Hadoop for statistical analysis. And so they have, you know, huge amounts of public domain data about airlines and factors that they've analyzed that could contribute to making flights late. And it's a great example of Clojure doing what, you know, Lisp historically, one of the things Lisp was supposed to be great at is, you know, doing these kinds of expert system-y type analysis of huge amounts of data and coming out with intelligent analysis on the other side. But there have been a few other, you know, publicly visible successes. Luke Prefontaine has a Clojure system in production at a veterinary hospital, which is a stackable, scalable architecture that's been described in some detail on the mailing list. And there are a few others. And there are a couple of startups who just recently have been making announcements on the mailing list about hiring. In terms of age, Clojure is much younger than the other languages it's starting to be compared to. You know, JRuby and Groovy are both probably three times older than Clojure, which just had its second birthday. Scala is also, you know, all these other languages are 5+ years old. So it's super early. Clojure is definitely not in the category of go look up the Clojure category on some job site. It's definitely in the friends and family and knowing some smart person and find an opportunity kind of situation right now. Having said that, we're overloaded and need Clojure experts. So Relevance has a program called the Hacker in Residence program where we have somebody come and stay with us at our offices in Durham, North Carolina for 6, 8, 10, 12 weeks, kind of a sabbatical, and work with us on projects. And if anyone listening is a Clojure guru and would be interested in doing that, or a semi-Clojure guru and would be interested in becoming more of one, definitely get in touch with me because we're going to be looking for people in that role targeting Clojure as much as Ruby on a go-forward basis.
Very, very cool. No, that's great. I mean, it must be a very exciting time to be involved in Clojure, particularly at this sort of this early cusp of things. And we are seeing momentum. I mean, it's huge. And there aren't, you know, although there's a lot of languages out there, they're not all getting quite the attention as things as such as Clojure and Scala are. And it's great to see a burgeoning burgeoning community and companies like yourselves looking to increase the amount of people that can call themselves expert in it. Okay, so the very last question I have, probably to tie down the interview, and thank you again, Stuart and Greg, for giving up a portion of your Sunday to do these interviews. It's great fun to do them. So the last question I always have is, if I wanted to get involved in helping to work with Clojure, what would my first step be? Where would I go? What would I list? Would I grab? And perhaps if there is such a thing, is there one particular area that you'd say, go look at this? There's lots of exciting stuff happening there, and there's an opportunity to define yourself.
So certainly, in addition to Clojure itself, there is a library of add-ons to Clojure, some of which are possible candidates for inclusion in Clojure in the future, called Clojure Contrib. Clojure Contrib has a much larger body of contributors to date than Clojure Core, but there's a lot of code in there. That code needs to be better tested. That code needs to be better documented. It's amazing when I review other people's Clojure code, the amount of reinventing of the wheel that happens because people are not aware that the thing that they want to have solved is already in Clojure Contrib somewhere. And I do that myself, and I'm constantly, you know, discovering something in Clojure Contrib that would have replaced 100 lines of code that I wrote by hand. So any assistance in writing automated tests and or providing documentation or tutorials, just go library by library. There's probably 40 or 50 sub-packages in Clojure Contrib now and helping out. If I could shout out for one that would particularly like to have some love, I wrote the Clojure Contrib wrapper for the Java management extensions for JMX. We're going to be using that on some projects going forward, but I would love to get feedback from other people who have production environments where they need to extract metrics and stats in real time for their application where they're using JMX, because I think that the JMX library demonstrates how easy it is to do things from within Clojure. JMX is kind of a poster child for how not to write code in Java. If you go and look through the unnecessary and incidental complexity in that API, and I've done what I can to paper over that. I'm sure there are bugs in that library, omissions on my part, and would love to get additional feedback on it from folks.
Very cool. Well, thank you very much, Stuart. Do you have any more questions, Greg?
I just wanted to give Stuart there, let's give him a brief opportunity to promote his book, Programming Clojure.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. If I can abuse that opportunity and instead promote the talks that are coming up in November, I have been doing a ton of research over the past couple of weeks. I'm going to be giving talks at OrDev in Sweden and at San Francisco at QCon and then at RubyConf. And I would love to see folks there. And just as a teaser for some of the research that I've done leading up to that, one of the questions that people ask is, you know, how can I get real work done mostly functional most of the time? And so I've been doing analysis of Clojure projects to figure out how functional are they versus doing things that involve mutable state. And the soundbite on that is that in the production code that I've analyzed, one line in 1,000 creates mutable references. So so people who are getting real work done, 999 lines of 1,000 are not used instantiating mutable references. They're doing things that are, you know, by pure function application. And I'll be presenting that result and some other results at those conferences. The other thing I would say, and I'm incredibly excited about this, is that starting in Q1 of 2010, the Pragmatic Studio will be running Clojure training, and I'll have the unusual experience for me recently of being the junior lightweight instructor in the room. I'll be co-teaching the Pragmatic Studio Clojure with a fellow named Rich Hickey early in 2010.
Now that should whet a lot of people's appetites there. So it'd be great to hear some follow up that's people go and bite for that. So that's good stuff to hear.
Stuart, I'm actually thinking of going to the OrDev. Hopefully I'll catch you there.
I'd love to see you there, Russ. Great.
All right, guys. Thanks. This has been a wonderful interview here, and I just want to repeat Russ's appreciation for us all getting together to do this.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks, Russ. Hope you guys have a great remainder of your weekend and that I'll meet you sometime soon.
Excellent. Thanks, guys. Brilliant.
The Pond Jumpers would like to thank the Skype call recorder team who's made it easy to record Skype phone calls. Please send us any feedback or contact us about any potential interviews. We love talking about anything open source. Visit our webpage at pondjumpers.com or send us a message through our contact form or simply email us at contact@pondjumpers.com. All writings and recordings produced by Pond Jumpers are published through a Creative Commons license and copyrighted by Greg Turquist and Russ Miles. The content of this podcast and website does not represent any of the companies mentioned nor their opinions. The intro and exit music is the upbeat Roxxon, Sweet Romana, and purchased from opuz.com, the site for royalty-free production music.
Working from both sides of the pond, the Pond Jumpers are Greg Turnquist and Russ Miles.